So we will begin Bezos Hashem. Shah Cheshbin HaNefesh, Cheshbin HaChamisha Asa. The 15th Cheshbin, Bezos Hashem. So Cheshbin 15. Cheshbin HaAdam Im Nafshoi. Think to yourself, Baz Manosoim Bim Zaynoisov Koidem HaTzerech Aleh. How we always think ahead when it comes to parnasa, the things we need. We don't just wake up in the morning and say, all right, where am I getting money from today? Now, but the natural way it works is when it comes to our material needs, we think ahead. Some people think further ahead. Some people think less, not as long ahead. But people definitely are busy investing in future, which makes a lot of sense. Yet he says, even though you don't know if you will actually live, until you don't know if you'll live long enough to actually enjoy it. Now, I want to stress, he's not putting down the concept. He believes that one should be responsible. What he's going to try to do is to contrast it, meaning if it's why, just one moment, if it's warranted to invest in the future that you never really know what the story is there, and we'll see soon about a future that you certainly do know is coming. Question?
It's making me think of Pony Hamagel.
Pony Hamagel and?
He saw somebody planting a tree.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We have that, Pony Hamagel with the tree, that's right. We also have Ashmedai with Shlomo HaMelech, if you remember that story. Where Shlomo HaMelech one time, not Shlomo HaMelech, Bnei Yehoyada, the servant of Shlomo HaMelech, captured the king of Shadim, Ashmedai. There's a whole very fascinating, lengthy description of the Gemara, that whole story. But whatever the case is, as he was taking him back, they actually had friendly discussions along the way, even though Ashmedai was a prisoner of his. But along the way, they passed by. Was this Ashmedai? Was it anyone? I think it was in this story. They passed by a person who was ordering shoes from a shoemaker, and he said, I would like you to prepare me shoes that can last for 7 years. So as they passed by, Ashmedai cracked up. So Beneo said to him, why are you laughing? He said, this person doesn't know that he's going in 7 days. So, okay, a shade laughed about that. But the point is that we invest in the future, even though we never really know if there is a future. Also, when a person has to head out on a long journey, so the person busy preparing. Now we're talking about in the olden days when a journey meant you were crossing a desert and you would be spending 4 weeks in the desert. So obviously you spend time beforehand planning your meals. Desert does not have, didn't, in those days, the desert didn't have fast food joints. So, when a person is planning a business trip, so he puts invests a lot of thought and effort into it beforehand. First of all, where do I want to end up? A person doesn't say, you know, I'm going to go to on a business trip. I heard that there's a lot of business opportunities in my field in Wisconsin. I'm going to go to Wisconsin. Where are you going to go when you land in the airport? I don't know. I'll see where a taxi wants to take me. No, he wants to go to Wisconsin. He hears that there are business opportunities there. So he spends some time researching. Who would I like to meet there? What appointments would I like to have? Etc. What are my important landmarks that I want to get to? You also spend time and effort in the details of the travel. How am I going to get there? So again, these days it would pretty much just mean an Uber and a flight, right? But in those days it was a whole process. There was part of the trip was going to be by boat, and then part of the trip on camelback, and where were you going to stop, and etc. There's a lot of planning involved. What food am I going to bring along? What food will I have there? Where am I going to stop on the way? Etc. And it makes a lot of sense. That is how you should plan a trip. And you certainly should be making plans and investing in your future. Even though, there's so much unpredictability, you don't know what's going to mess up, what curveballs Hashem is going to send your way. Veloy b'arichus yomav. You also don't know if you'll live that long. But yet, it makes sense.
It's all over. From the limits, when he would get to this point, he would always explain that on Pesach they would buy up all these charcoal cookies. So when they went on a deal during Sukkot and there wasn't a Sukkah there, they
That's
didn't have to make up
right.
this.
I used to send out that email every year before Pesach. Buy charcoal cookies for Sukkos. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's called thinking ahead. That's called thinking ahead. Good. You know what? That is actually the thinking of a person whose mind is in halacha and ratzon Hashem. Always thinking ahead. It's like they say that the Brisker Rav, when he looked for an apartment, his main qualification, the first thing he would look for when he came in to see a house, was where would I light the menorah in this house? Which is the appropriate place for lighting the menorah, which has the right window. But there you go. But you know what? That's actually planning ahead in Meila Mabater. So now he says, I'm not ridiculing that. I think you should be doing that. But bear in mind that there's another future. We certainly have to be preparing ourselves for the occasion. We have to be preparing ourselves for the long trip to that other world.
Is it a long trip?
What's that?
It's a long
I guess
trip.
he means a long trip, as in you're going to be away for a long time. You're going to be away for a long time. And you definitely are going to be traveling there. There's no changing plans. So there also think about, well, what am I going to eat there? Now, you're not going to be eating there, but you definitely will need provisions. You will need provisions. So think a little bit about, will I have everything I need there? Also, more than that, it's not just having everything you need there. Will you have everything you'll want there? See, you know, if you look around, you know, we're assaulted by advertisements that expose us to worlds of luxury that are like just beyond us. It's just like not relevant, but it definitely can sometimes get the imagination going. So you have to think to yourself that there. It's actually up to you. It would actually be worthwhile to sometimes look at pictures of these unbelievably opulent and luxurious palaces in order to get an idea of this is Olam Hazeh and get an idea of what Hashem has in mind for you. And to realize that you are busy equipping it, you are busy setting it up now. And the sky is not the limit. It goes way beyond that. There's so much you can have. Every possible luxury. That would be one toilet in yes, paying attention to these advertisements or articles or whatever it is that just expose you to the expanse of luxury that some people enjoy. To get the idea that you, for you, what Hashem has in mind for you is much more than I don't get it. How sometimes even in firm publications they'll give these a whole long article about this like multi-billionaire and his whole lifestyle. And I don't get it. What are they trying to accomplish with these with these articles. But you know what? That is one toeles. You know, it's one benefit that can perhaps come from it, the understanding that we can set all that up for ourselves and beyond if we put ourselves to it. There was one time that I had this close of hearing Rav Ovadia Yosef, a full shiur of his. And just one thing he said was, he said, we say, Gemara tells us famously, it's schar mitzvah by al malecha. There isn't reward for a mitzvah in this world. Sometimes you get like residual reward. There's oichel perasein bo'ilam hazeh. Like you get kind of like the fringe benefits of a mitzvah in this world. But the schar of a mitzvah is reserved for the next world. So Rav Ovadia said, why? Why is it like that? Maybe I'd like to get a mitzvah or two in this world. I'll save the rest for the next world. So he said as follows. He said, the Gemara tells us that Nebuchadnezzar, he reigned over the entire populated world at that time, the entire known world at that time. Why? The Gemara tells us because he took three steps toward Kvod Shamayim. What happened? The king of Babel at the time was writing a letter after they heard the whole story of the miracles that happened in Eretz Yisrael with Chizkiah HaMelech. So the king of Babel was writing a letter and he wrote, in honor, Lichvoid, now Chizkiah, the king of Yehuda, and in the great city of Yerushalayim, and Hashem, the God of Israel. Okay? So Nebuchadnezzar was the secretary. He was actually putting together this letter. And he wrote up the letter and sent it off according to the kings. So Nebuchadnezzar was writing the letter and he sent it off with the courier, and then he thought, one minute, the order was wrong. It should have said first Hashem, the God of Israel, then Yerushalayim, and then Chizkiyahu. So he got up to chase the courier. And he took three steps, and then he said, oh, whatever. And he sat back down. He got back busy with whatever social media he was busy with. So he took three steps lichvod shamayim, three steps in honor of Hashem, didn't actually carry it out. He took three steps with that intent and didn't actually carry it out. And Hashem said an appropriate reward for that is that he should reign over the entire world. So Rav Ovadia said, if you're talking about a yid who not only intends to do the mitzvah, but actually does the mitzvah and has the added level of mitzvah va'oseh, and the schar coming to him is greater because this is something he's commanded to do, which we know is a higher level of reward. He said, it just, the world doesn't have the capacity for it. The world does not have the capacity for a single mitzvah. So you have to think about all the luxuries available in this world and realize that they simply they don't add up to one mitzvah. So Rav Ovadia said that's why it's simple that schar mitzvah by al malecha. They cannot be schar for a mitzvah in this world. If this is what a non-Jew who intended to do something and didn't actually see it through, but got, then it just doesn't begin. This world just doesn't begin to be equipped to give us what Hashem has in mind for us, one single mitzvah. And certainly, if you're talking about a Jew, most Jews that I know, did even more than 10 mitzvahs. Okay? So we're collecting mitzvahs our whole life. So, and yes, we're busy building up for ourselves immensely luxurious estates.
What about like Tzadik Paralo and Rasha Batolfo? I mean, Batolfo, like, doesn't he say earlier in the Sefer that sometimes Hashem gives the reward to a Rasha here in this world so he doesn't get it in the other world? Is he talking about non-Jews or what?
How does the idea of paying a Rasha off in this world work? I don't know entirely. What I would say is, in a very general way, is as follows. I mean, the question is, why is it fair, right? So what we would say in a very general way is that Hashem may sometimes deal with the person according to his attitude. Meaning, if your attitude is, Olam Hazeh is more worth it to me than Olam Haba, Hashem says, okay, fine, so I'll pay you in your currency. A person whose attitude is, Olam Haba is more worth it to me than Olam Hazeh, Hashem says, well, then I'm going to pay you in your currency. That's what we'll say in a very general way right now.
I think it's a big discernment to be reached.
What's that?
I think it's a very big discernment to be
It
reached.
is. It is. It's a big sign to be rich. It's true. But you know what? So Avigdor Miller used to say, it's an isayin to be in any life circumstance. The truth is that to live in this world
Yeah.
is also a big isayin. Okay. So now, so therefore he's coming back and telling us. You connect to the concept of preparing and investing in the future. When it comes to material life, even though the material life is always iffy, everything you invest is always iffy. A, you don't know how it's going to work out, and B, you don't even know if you'll be there when you're busy investing in next week. So certainly when it comes to the world that is definitely there, we will definitely be there, and our efforts definitely are what make the difference. I mean, it correlates to our efforts. So certainly we should be thinking lachshov batzeda, to be thinking about the provisions we want to have there. Like we said before, we want to be thinking about what would you want your luxury estate to be looking like. And also to be thinking about another thing. How will I present myself on that great moment of actually standing face to face with Hashem? On that great moment, will I be presentable? What will I look like? How will I be presenting myself toward him? B'yoyim ha'cheshben ha'gadol, on that very great day of reckoning. This is right. This is what the pasuk in Kohelet says. Right, it's like the Talmidim of Rabbi Elazar asked him. He said, "I'm giving you very good advice. Do tshuva right before you die." So the Talmidim said to him, "Well, how do we know when that is?" And he said, "Exactly. Do tshuva right before you might die." And in Mela, that means you'll basically be busy with tshuva all the time. Whenever there's a possibility that you'll die, do tshuva. This is what Rabbi Elazar told his Talmidim. And that's really what Kohelet says, as he quotes the pasuk of Kohelet, it says, "Bechol eis yu b'gadecha levanim." Make sure you're always dressed for a chasana, right? Make sure you're always showered and well dressed. Okay. Again, in material terms, that doesn't work so well, but in spiritual terms, it does. It does. So to be thinking of, I'm going to have to present myself before Hashem, what I want to be looking like. That's just going to be a reflection of our deeds, and even more importantly, of where our mind is. Okay. Ve'ik, how can we disregard that? Mas, the trip is ongoing. Ha'atoka tadira, the move is going to be permanent. Va'derech, and you're not going to be getting much rest, meaning if you're not going to be fully prepared for the trip, you're not going to get to any. You didn't come there ready to go through it comfortably, then you're not going to get to a comfortable place. Meaning it's not like you went, okay, fine. It's like I'll put up with it for an hour, for a day, but then I'll be able to relax. No, if you didn't prepare your comforts, they're just not going to come. So why don't we have in our mind that focus, the focus on our end? Why do we not pay attention to the provisions that we need? I want to add a point here. Now, people often ask, why doesn't the Torah, why don't we find Olam Haba in the Torah? Right? So the Kuzari already points out, we see it in the Gemara, Now, the Victor Miller also said, he said the question is a little bit of a mistake because we do find references to Olam Haba in the Torah. The question properly asked would be more, why doesn't the Torah expand on describing it? Why are the rewards of the Torah presented in material terms?
Yeah.
But there are quite a number of references to Olam Haba in the Torah. One of the most outstanding ones, perhaps the most explicit one, Kuzari brings this, is Bilam, in his prophecy, where he said, let me die the death of the righteous and let my end be like theirs. This is pretty much as explicit a reference as you'll get, just again, without elaboration. But let's appreciate what was going on. Let's appreciate what was being said. Bilam is looking at the Jewish people, right? That's where his nevuah was inspired from. He looked at Hashem's favorite vision, just went, I look at a Jew, I'm not inspired in the way that I should be because I don't see him the way Hashem does. I don't see the beauty in any Jew that I look at. I don't see the unbelievable beauty. I can see some of it. I can work to appreciate some of it, as we've discussed. But Bilam, when he was looking out at the Jewish people, Hashem opened his eyes to see them the way Hashem sees them. And therefore, Bilam was unbelievably inspired. And therefore, his voice just came pouring forth. And but part of what he saw was when he looked at them, he saw not just their current state, but he saw where all of them were headed. And when he saw that, he just his he was going out of his mind with envy, and he just expressed that longing. Oh, he saw right now, so this person was sitting in his tent, totally oblivious to the fact that Bilam is looking at him now. But Bilam saw this person not only right now, but he saw his whole future laid out in front of him. He saw where he's going after 120. And Bilam looked at that and said, wow, if only I could die the way he's going to die and end up in the place that he'll end up in.
Did Bill disappear when his man was asleep? Or does he even change?
Oh, okay. That is a very good question. That's a very good question. Why didn't he change? As soon as the Nevuah ended, he flipped right back to good old Bilam or bad old Bilam. What happened there? So, what we'll just right now say in a very broad, general way is that Bilam was the epitome of a person who had all the understanding, but there was that immense gap between that and what he was actually willing to give up on. What? And basically, Mamish, the same idea. Exactly that point. Bilam knew it all in his mind. And that was also what drove him so crazy about Klal Yisrael. That's why he hated Klal Yisrael with such a passion, because he knew it better than they did. He saw it clearer than they did. But, you know, Klal Yisrael got the privilege of being forced by Hashem into his system. And throughout the Dor HaMidbar, Hashem banged them into it very harshly. Bilam didn't get that privilege. And that's why Bilam stayed who he was, and he watched Klal Yisrael with such envy. Why? Because Hashem came and applied harsh disciplinarian methods to them and banged them into his system. And when Bilam looked at that and saw where they were going, he just went out of his mind with envy. When he woke up the next morning, he wasn't going to make a change. It's an amazing story to learn from.
We all have like things in our lives where you have like some Hashgacha Pratis and you just see Hashem so clearly. And then a month, a few weeks later, a month later, or whatever, somehow it just fades in the background.
Exactly, because the real point, that's right. The real point here is, and this is true for Bilam on his level, and it's true for us on our level, and that is that Hashem provides flashes, but Hashem set it up such that he wants you to then work toward it. It has to come with effort on your part. Flashes of inspiration, anybody who's been around the block long enough, we know, you know, what we used to think, I'm a changed person forever. Forever in the better case means about a week. And if you're not going to actually take measures to see, okay, where am I going to start sweating now? Immediately, the Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz has a whole piece on this. You're unbelievably inspired. You're a changed person. Take an immediate concrete step. Start on a concrete path. So what am I going to do? And not just, what do you mean, what am I going to do? So I see the whole world differently now. Everything's going to be different. No. Make a concrete plan Otherwise, Hashem says, I don't want you riding on inspiration that I fed you. I'll provide the inspiration, but then it's your job to start sweating and make sure that you're holding on to it. And again, Bilam didn't do that. He had all the inspiration, didn't do that. Okay. So now, Yisasaknu bo'olam hakoleh. So we're very busy with the world that's disposable. We're investing great efforts in that disposable world. Ve'enachnu hakayim. But we are neglecting the world that's going to be forever, and a world that we have a place in. We have a place in that eternal world. Gufeinu, we're busy with our body's problems. Sichleinu. But we are disregarding our mind's problems. I want to insert a very important parenthesis here. He's talking about the mind. Why isn't he talking about the neshama? Why the mind? The mind is the reflection of the neshama. The mind is the most physical expression of the neshama that we have. And primarily, a person's existence in the next world is going to be where his mind is, meaning your personality is in your mind. When I say mind, I mean the whole system of the mind and the heart, the psyche, right? That's where your personality is. All of the things that you do, the good things you do and the wrong things that you do, or the wrong things that you don't do and the good things that you don't do, they all stem from lemaisa, your psyche, right? Lemaisa, where your mind is.
Avos, the heart. So why is it the heart?
Why? So, Avigdor Miller, okay, so let me round out this point, then we'll get to your question. So, therefore, what he's saying is pay attention to where your mind is, what your attitudes are, what your sentiments are. And that's where you want to be putting in an awful lot of work. Now, we do that too through actions. A lot of the actions that we do, it's not just that we our mind is in a certain place, our mind and heart is in a certain place, and therefore we act a certain way, but also we want to get our minds and hearts to a certain place, so we do certain deeds. That's something we should elaborate on. But to get to your question, Chovas Halavos is called Chovas Halavos to bring out this point exactly, that you are where your lev is, you are who your lev is. But lev, and Avigdor Miller would stress all the time, he very unapologetically just translated the word lev as mind, which was a Kiddush to many people. It's actually an Evan Ezra. But really what it means is, and this is really the point that he was trying to make, it's the whole system of our attitudes, sentiments, the way your personality works, what you value, what you don't value, what you feel strongly about, what you don't feel strongly about, your levels of awareness, what are the things that occupy the most space in your mind on a regular basis. And that's what Chovas HaLevavos is. If we want to get around the problem of the semantics of his mind, heart, which we're really putting lumping together into one, we would just call it the internal Chovas. The internal Chovas. That's the way we would put it. Because really, you are who you are on your inside. You are your personality. You are your mind and heart. So therefore, it's coming and telling us, get to work on your mind and heart. See where you're lacking there. And you do that by Chovas HaLevavos. That's one good way, is to come to a Chovas HaLevavos once a week. Okay. Twice as good as twice a week. Okay. Now, Ve'ozavnu avoydas yitzreinu, they said, instead of being busy carrying the oil of serving Hashem, we're busy carrying the oil of our taivas, our material desires. So, he says, this is just one big confusion of vision. And it's all so all-encompassing. But this is really what he's trying to do, to get us to see past the here and now. The here and now meaning also the expanded here and now. For the responsible person, the here and now can mean 10 years ahead, 20 years ahead. But to see even past that to that true ultimate life. I'll just add, we'll round this out with the point Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter made a very, very profound point, and he said like this. He said, we often think of imagination as a contradiction to seichel, to logic. Logic deals with the concrete you have in front of you in a concrete way, and imagination is a little bit fantasy. So he said, but in many cases, it's actually the opposite. You have to activate imagination and fantasy in order to connect to reality. And I'll give a simple idea. You mentioned before, let's say I have a very, very, very heavy smoker. Okay, let's say you have two of them. They both come to the doctor, get their checkup. And the doctor says to each of them in their turn, basically delivers the same message. And he says, well, to put it very simply, either you kick the cigarette or the cigarette's going to kick you, right? So they both step out of there. They both step out of there. And one guy says, all right, that was an intense session by the doctor. I think I need a cigarette. And, he has a good smoke. And he says, you know what? I should take this seriously, but right now I'm in the here and now, and I know what I need, and the cigarette box is going to stay for the time being, and we'll see. And then the other guy steps out, and he thinks to himself, starts thinking ahead. He has the cigarette box in his pocket also. He would also like to reach for a cigarette, but he thinks to his head. He thinks ahead, and he's picturing the scenes, imagining himself in a hospital bed, attached to pipes. And with all kinds of pins stuck inside him. And he's imagining himself a skinny, skinny version of himself with an emaciated face. And he's imagining himself gasping for every breath. And he's imagining his wife sitting in the chair next to him and crying. And he just throws away the cigarette box. So he says, the first guy is living in a concrete reality. The second guy is busy imagining. Who's more connected to reality? The second guy is more connected to reality. He activated his imagination in order to connect to reality because so much of reality is beyond what we see. Okay, I'll just finish rounding out the point. So the Rishon LeZion says, this is what we want to be doing with Olam HaBa. He calls it Ha'asid HaVadai. He says, it's coming. Think of it more than that. Not that it's coming, it's there. We're just not all the way there yet. Think of it, it's there. It's just right around the corner, right beyond the curve where we don't see. Just its reality is always being shifted. Maybe they're toning it down a bit based on what you're doing now, or maybe they're actually enhancing it a bit just based on what you're doing now. But it's there. You're going to make a point.
We see how someone makes some mistakes in life.
Oh, that's the epitome, the prime example. Shivisi Hashem Negdi Tamid. Shivisi means I picture him. That's right. So this is where the Chovas HaLevavos wants to get us now. And these things, well, he's going to move in a more stark way the next time into really picturing that last thing. Now, sometimes, we tend to think of these things that it's depressing, it gets a person down. It shouldn't be. If we really connect to the reality of Olam HaBa, if we really connect to the reality of Hashem waiting with so much for us, waiting to introduce us. There's almost like a certain excitement when you bring a baby home for the first thing. Though it's a little silly because the baby doesn't, but you bring your baby, bringing a baby home into your home for the first time to show the baby, here, this is where you're going to live. Isn't this a nice house? Right? And I remember feeling that way and thinking to myself, it's so silly, baby don't even see it. But there's a certain excitement about it. Hashem is waiting to take you. You're not going to come as a baby. You're going to come with a fully developed understanding, and Hashem is going to say, this is what I have laid out for you. This is what I had waiting for. Kiviyochol, with an excitement to show you the place that he's been preparing for you and saving for you. And if we think of it in those terms, it should be motivating. It shouldn't be depressing. It should be motivating. It should be stimulating. We want to take advantage of every day because we appreciate the fact that every day holds so much value in terms of what we can do toward enhancing that existence. Be'ezus Hashem. Okay, a good tavach, a good
tavach.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you.